Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
Mythos.
First time Mythos has been on the show in almost 3 years. I know. I think we tried it last couple of years to get you to come on, but you were just too busy with real life.
Oh, yes. Life is a pain.
He says that just as his family walks in.
Yeah. Peace, everybody. This is episode 182 with Dan Q.
Good luck, Commander.
Makalua.
Wait, what? Now you're an XCOM squad, Dan?
Mad Jin.
No, he just wants to be a CNC commander.
The Mian Team.
It's not you, it's me. Give me your resources.
And all your land. He wants that too.
Perhaps. That comes later.
And myself, Mythos, who had a WeWire's network for you guys.
Whoa.
Aww.
Why your router suck?
Was that Rewire or WeWire? It sounded a little.
Well, you take these tiny little wires.
They're hunting wabbits.
Over the last few episodes of Polycast, we have been talking about the Civilization V expansion pack Brave New World that was released in July, and we thought we were going to get through anything and everything about the expansion pack in 3 episodes. But there was, you know, like last time, we had an extensive conversation about this patch that was released. Not the fall patch, but the pre-fall patch. So we didn't get to something new in Brave New World, and that's ideological tenets. For those not familiar or forgetting, just a very brief rundown of it is each ideology is a 3-tiered set of 16 policies that can be purchased with culture as opposed to a social policy. Every tenet after the first in a tier unlocks one tenet in the next tier. So to get to a level 2 tenet, you need to have at least 2 level 1s, and for a level 3, you need to have at least 2 level 2s. But the requirements are not specific, as in social policies. So within a tier, you can choose any tenet that you want, similar to religious beliefs. The 3 ideological tenets are autocracy, freedom, and order. And how did I choose which ones to say first? I used a little something called the alphabet.
Oh, I thought it was by the one you picked the most.
Although this is not a top 10 because it doesn't quite work. What I did is when I was looking at all of the different tenets and then the possibilities for level 1, level 2, level 3, those tenets that I would choose, because we talk about, for example, we talked about social policies, that if you finish a social policy tree, you get something else. Well, it doesn't work like that with tenets, but then usually I don't find the game lasts long enough to really be able to finish a complete tenet, in part because actually there's a social policy I want to get this time rather than another tenet. And actually, often I find I get the tenets that I want before the end of the game, and then I'm going back to social policies. But perhaps that's different for other people, and of course it varies from game to game. We're going to start with autocracy level 1. This has been referred to as the military, air quote, ideology. It doesn't have to be either military. Well, presumably you're going on the offense, but I suppose it could be from a defensive perspective as well, depending upon your priorities and your given circumstances. Elite forces. Wounded military units inflict 25% more damage than normal. Mobilization. Gold cost of purchasing units reduced by a third. United Front. Militaristic city-states grant units twice as often when you are at war with a common foe. Futurism. Plus 100 tourism with all known civs when a great writer, artist, or musician is born. Industrial espionage. Spy steel technologies at twice the normal rate. Fortified borders. Plus 2 local happiness from every walls, castle, arsenal, and military base constructed in a city. And universal healthcare. Plus 2 local happiness from every national wonder. So if you're choosing autocracy, what are we first looking at as a possibility to choose under level 1? What are our favorites? What ones are kind of more situational? And which ones are we more like, let me get the technical term correct for everyone.
Although I have to point out that every set for level 1 has the universal healthcare.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Just be universal healthcare.
So Phyrexis is very Canadian.
Well, Sid Meier was born in Canada, so that must be what it's about. That's about. Since universal healthcare was mentioned, I find that to be, it's kind of my, I might choose that one or I might not. Part of that comes from, for instance, in terms of national wonders, it's not so much, oh, it's only +2 local happiness from every national wonder. It's how many national wonders do I have? And then I compare that to, for instance, if I'm going for happiness, you might want to go with fortified borders because every walls, castle, arsenal, and military base. And if you already have that infrastructure in place, or you know that you can very quickly construct that, and then you're thinking, okay, the next time I'm going to be able to get another tenant means that, okay, all the national wonders are here. I'm going to actually have more happiness by the time I can get my next tenant or social policy if I choose fortified borders as opposed to universal healthcare. So universal healthcare is more situational to me than fortified borders. And fortified borders, if I was going to choose a level one autocracy tenant, first one, almost every single time I would go with that one.
I'm telling you, the most universal healthcare is bullets, man. It takes care of everything as long as you have something that can fire them. Come on, we're going autocracy. Mow them down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a math question. I know people have responded that they don't like the math, but it is a math problem. The question
That's all said. Come on.
Yeah, I know. it is a math problem. If you have a wide empire, the walls and castles and everything, you get extra happiness from that because you can get volume. Volume discount on happiness. But if you have a tradition empire and went taller with tradition and monarchy, you get one unhappiness per 2 population. So that one happiness per national wonder, if you have them all stacked in your capital, which is a fairly common thing to do if you're going in that direction, means that it's effectively doubled. So it actually works out fairly well that way. But you can take level 1 and level 2 and level extra level 1 happiness buildings, tenants anyways, very quickly. So I tend to take them all just because happiness is good. Futurism sucks.
Seriously, 100 tourism, woo.
It's limited till after you take the tenant. So, yeah, if you haven't generated your most of your artists or writers before, and even a couple of your musicians before you get into the industrial era, then you're going to be way behind on tourism anyways.
And so 100 is a drop in a bucket when you've got Civ that's over there producing culture out the, you know what.
Yep. Futurism would be better if you get, say, tourism from all your great generals and great admirals you build. Or get, because you're going to get a lot of those if you go autocracy and fight, even culturally. Or if the number was, like, way higher. Because you have to think, at that point in the game, 100 tourism at that point in the game, especially if you're going culture, and even if you're not going culture, you should be producing over 100 per turn yourself. And culture per turn, for pretty much everybody, should be at least 200 to 300 by that point. Or at least can be. It means that every time you produce one, every 20-ish turns, by that point, and that's being generous. So that turns out to basically being two tourism per turn for a short period of time.
Speaking of weak, still in level one autocracy, not as bad as futurism, but I got to put United Front there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's because like units twice as often, assuming you haven't run them over anyway.
For militaristic city-states?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Or that the AI hasn't snapped them all up.
Nah, that's not weak. Especially if you've got a nice unique unit coming out of it. Getting it twice as often, getting a unit basically every 8 turns versus 17-ish. That's not too bad.
I guess I say that because my luck is when I'm doing warmongering, I'm on the map with a bunch of mercantile or something.
Yeah, that one is situational. If you don't have a lot of militaristic city-states on the map, then yeah. But the more militaristic city-states on the map, if you've actually going to choose that, then you're going to fight to get control of them. And then they start providing you more an army, especially if there's nice unique units. Getting a nice little panzer army going from militaristic city-states is nice.
Well, sure, if they're going to actually give you that's the unique unit that they're going to give you, unless it's something, you know, earlier on in the game, which was nice then, but by the time you get to a tenant, it's like, well,
yeah.
It's another one of these units, or it's another one of the kind of standard in that current era. Unless there is that kind of special unique that you can use in that moment, unless you have a lot of militaristic city-states, and that's the kind of the thing that you can't control, how many militaristic city-states you're going to have at the start, whereas you have greater control over your tourism output as opposed to, guess how many military city-states are on the game?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah, it's situational, but there's situational stuff in lots of areas.
I put it out as weak sauce, I'm sorry.
On the average, yeah, it's probably less than average.
Optimal?
Come on, though. I mean, can be pretty solid, depending on your situation, is good. Yeah. The problem with it would only be if it's, like, always bad or...
Yeah, it's, you know, never always bad. There are situations where it's overpowered, probably, depending on what's going on. But, if you didn't go that line and didn't go patronage, because it's one of those ones where you would be going, like, diplomatic autocracy, so you'd already gone patronage and stuff like that, so where it'd be easier to maintain the allies.
I code these, you know, as green, yellow, and red, and I got United Front and Futurism in the red. I got Universal Healthcare in the yellow. I got Fortified Borders in the green, and I'm also going to put Industrial Espionage into the yellow. Spies and steal technologies at twice the normal rate. Now,
I put that in the OP category. It is.
Yes.
My experience
level 3 spy getting him twice as often. Yes, please.
It's actually more than twice as often.
Yeah.
Just due to the math.
Well, I've got it in yellow. You have to get to that point where the spy is that good.
No, you don't. Level 1 spies will steal in like 10, 15 turns versus 30. So.
Yeah, which means that the level 3 one is stealing in like 2 or 3 maybe.
Well, no. There's a certain limit to it, but yeah.
Probably research that in less time, though, if it was the 10 or 15 turned one.
Yeah, but you could research A-Tech in 10 or 15 turns, but then they'll also research A-Tech in 10 or 15 turns, and you can steal that tech from them. It's the, hey, I went this beeline path, and all the AIs went for the generic path, and I just took all your stuff.
I still maintain a situation because, yeah, you could go ahead and get those technologies, but maybe getting that technology, it's really not going to get you something that you want. It kind of depends on, yeah, what path you've gone down, what path they've gone down, and then what it is that you can actually get for yourself as compared to, hey, look at that. I could get that technology, which I kind of skipped, which is nice, or took me 10 or 15 turns to get that. True, that means that you could go down and research another technology you want and then, quote unquote, pick that one other up for free. But seeing as how you've got a limited number of spies as well, and I know that we need that for balance, don't get me wrong. That's why I put it solidly in the middle.
Oh, no. It's very overpowered. Because by that point, you've got one from Renaissance, one from the Industrial, maybe one from the Modern, if you had to go all the way up to Modern to get to your...
three guys who are now double spying across at least three empires.
Yep. And don't
That's
forget,
a lot of tech.
And don't forget, there's this nice little National Wonder radio that makes them all level 2. It makes them more powerful. Plus, keep in mind, this is in autocracy. So in autocracy, it means that from the industrial era on, there are very few, if any, techs that you don't want. They're all giving you lots of stuff, or they're on a tech path that gets you towards something. So you could go, as an autocrat, straight up to, say, railroads, and then push your way through into combustion and go for tanks, or can go to the usual tech path and then eventually get there. But if you go up to tanks by yourself, you could steal all the way through the research labs and then get your extra science that way. And I would say that on higher difficulty levels, it's far more useful because the AIs are going to have far more techs. And at middle levels, it may not be as useful because they might not have techs because you might have out-teched them anyways. So if you're not in the tech lead, then it's a useful one to steal from everybody very quickly. If you are in the tech lead, well, okay, then it's not as good.
And I will put mobilization and elite forces in the green, although lesser green than fortified borders. Like fortified borders, then mobilization, then elite forces. Given that you are taking this, and I assume you are doing the military thing, like you are on the offensive. The mobilization is the gold cost of purchasing units reduced by a third, and elite forces is wounded military units inflict 25% more damage than normal. As of course, if they didn't have that.
Yeah, I like the reduced cost, but not the wounded one. The wounded one's okay, it's just not great.
Does that mean that the normal, was it negative 20% or whatever it is, the modifier for wounded? Does that mean it's not, no longer takes place, or is that you take the wounded damage away, then you add the plus 25% more?
It adjusts it. It's been that way for a bit. So as your unit is wounded, past certain barriers, so I think at 80 hit points and 60 and 40 and blah, 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 this basically bumps it up a level. It doesn't add extra damage. And no, Japan does not stack Bushido and this trait at all, because Japan just gets set at 100% flat.
Level 2, autocracy, militarism, plus 2 local happiness from every barracks, armory, and military academy. Lightning Warfare, plus 3 movement for great generals. Armor units gain plus 15% attack, plus 1 movement, and ignore enemy zone of control. Plus 3 local happiness from every courthouse and building courthouses in half the usual time comes with police state. Reducing unit gold maintenance cost by 33% is at nationalism. Third alternative will give you the quantity of strategic resources increased by 100%. Also plus 5 food and plus 5 science in the capital. And total war will give you plus 25% production when building military units, and new military units start with plus 15 experience. I found this the most difficult level to rank of any level 1, 2, 3 of any of the tenets.
Yeah, well, this is the point where you're not really getting purely generic tenets. This is where you start having to split out between whether you're going diplo, whether you're going military, whether you're going culture. So, yeah, it's a bit of a grab bag, and you're only going to get a couple of these. So, yeah, it would be a little harder, but if you know where you're going, then it's a little easier.
And actually, there's none of these that I would rate as crap.
Yeah, I would hope not. Level 2 tenets.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, well, the thing about the level 2 tenets, they're all at least decent.
Okay, so what's one that perhaps we think is more middle of the road?
Third alternative, maybe?
I agree with that.
I mean, it's twice as much strategic resources. That's never bad when you're running somebody over. Although, at some point, double the amount of, like, a lot doesn't really matter anymore.
That.
After you've gone through a couple of sieves, this is not going to matter so much.
Of course, you could always sell them.
Sell them to who? You're going through more sieves.
Exactly. Sell them to the other sieves so that they build units with those strategic resources so that when you go to attack them, they all get a combat penalty.
Oh, there you go.
It does seem, well, a little bit weaker because everything in this tier is so good, but it's still great.
Oh, yeah. And it even got boosted between Gods and Kings and Brave New World because of the extra 5 science and 5 food in your capital.
I would also kind of put in the middle, and this isn't just an absolute, but it's also a consideration of what else you could take instead. Like as Imagine said, you're probably only going to have one or two of these at the most. Lightning Warfare.
If you've got an armor unit heavy army, you know, like we were talking about buying panzers earlier, then lightning warfare is great.
Tanky, tanky, tanky.
Yeah, see, there's the middle because I'm not armor heavy.
Yeah, most people end up being air heavy, but that's because air units are OP.
Do, 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 do.
And really easy to get as compared to tanks. To get to tanks, you really have to choose to ignore 90% of the tech tree.
What if you're stealing techs using industrial espionage?
You can have planes and tanks.
Yeah, but planes still win.
Well, it depends on the planes. I mean, real fighters and real bombers definitely win. Triplanes are kind of eh, but Great War bombers are pretty powerful by themselves. But tanks usually are strong enough to not get wiped out by them. But you have to get up there first.
And I'll also put in the middle here, probably even more controversially than Lightning Warfare, Total War.
Total War? That's like one of the best ones ever.
I'd rather nationalism, militarism, or police state, be honest.
Actually, police state would be, for me, one of the ones in the middle as compared to Total War.
Yeah.
Total War, extra 15 experience on all units that you produce. Yay! There's only so many places you can get experience, and getting to that third or potentially getting close to the fourth free promotion on starting units is very, very nice. Not to mention you get extra other stuff, so...
And you see, by that point in time, I feel I'm already on the roll, and my happiness. Oh, look at the more cities I'm taking. Ouch, ouch, ouch. My production. Ouch, ouch, ouch. Oh, yes, more happiness, please.
Oh, yeah. I mean, more happiness, I would take the one for armories and everything else, because that's 2 per city. Those are nice. Of course, puppets don't build them, so you have to use your courthouses, which, of course, gets you into the plus 3 from courthouses. But I rarely, if ever, actually build a courthouse. It's almost always just by the courthouse. So getting it built in half the time, kind of
Oh, yeah, that part's kind of like I said, I just buy it. I don't care about that. It's the happiness portion. I'm excluding the build courthouses in half the usual time.
Yeah, but you have to keep in mind, courthouse is worth 5 gold per turn loss. So you're paying 5 gold for 3 happiness. Don't really like that conversion rate.
Well, sometimes happiness is expensive, and if, you know, there's no more luxury resources I can get, I'm kind of maxing out on my happiness buildings, and I'm trying to construct more military units instead, or, you know, buy those instead, then It's definitely not going to be like, oh, I can now conquer a whole other civilization with this. It's just like, I don't have to stop taking out the civilization to help the happiness, because I know that the happiness hit that I'm quote-unquote going to get, because the courthouse will reduce unhappiness, but then you also get more unhappiness on top of that. It's just kind of like, hey, I've reduced the unhappiness from the courthouse, plus I've built another happiness building, all wrapped into the courthouse.
Yeah, no, see, that's the thing. Going from puppet to being courthouse is usually like a one-step process for me. It's either a puppet or it's a city that has been had a courthouse slapped on it. I never stay in between because that's just a bad place to be with the extra unhappiness from being annexed without a courthouse. It's just not really worth it. So, I mean, that's why I would completely ignore the happiness from courthouses until like the third or fourth level two tenant, because I would definitely take the +2 per armory or barracks, because that's 4 happiness, which is more than the courthouse bonus, and for free.
Oh, yeah. In terms of the ones that I'm really positive towards, for me, nationalism, then militarism, then the police state.
Yeah.
And then as for level 3...
I don't really think too much of the cult of personality. If you're at that point, I don't know why you'd want the tourism.
The tourism, just to go for the culture game. That's the point. The point behind the level 3s is that there's one level 3 per victory condition that the ideology is meant to go for. There you have culture, diplomacy, and military on world domination. For autocracy, the cult of personality for culture is the number one culture booster in the game, at least from a straight percent choice, because everybody else gets slightly lower numbers. Though you do require to actually get into a war, but if you're going autocracy, that's not really an issue.
Plus 50% tourism to civilizations fighting a common enemy. Clausewitz's legacy, am I pronouncing that properly?
Clausewitz. Clausewitz.
Yeah. Receive a 25% attack bonus to all military units for the first 50 turns after this policy is adopted. And gunship diplomacy, +6 influence boost each turn with city-states from which you could demand tribute.
Mm-hmm.
Legacy is probably the medium-ish one here.
Yeah, I would rank them. The culture one for the culture game is the best. Although the culture one from the culture game does sort of mean that you need to make a fake war. So if you've beaten somebody up and left them down to one city and you're going to get other AIs declaring war on that civ because it's only got one city, and just surround them with your own units, stay at war with them. Everybody else joins that war. You get +50% versus everybody, not to mention the Diplo bonus because they like
you. You're technically sitting there protecting them the whole time.
Yeah, you're basically sitting there protecting them from everybody else killing them. And then you get +50% tourism per turn. If you are the big warmonger, then you're probably not going to get a culture victory this way. But I would put the military tenant as number 2 in the list, only because bonus combat strength for a limited time is not good. Yeah, it's 50 turns, so if you wait till you're sure that the game's going to be over in under 50 turns, then you probably could have finished the game in under 50 turns without it. Not to mention, it's the only ideology tenant in the game, especially at level 3, that has a time limit and stops working after that. So that's kind of annoying. And
you
couldn't
have made it like 5% less and let it be for the rest of the game or something?
Yeah, I'd take 10, 15%, maybe 20% for the rest of the game.
Same.
Call it done. And the absolute worst is, of course, gunboat diplomacy. It sucks. It is the crappiest diplomacy tenant in the game by far. And the reason for it is to get to the point at the end of the game to be able to actually get the city-states into the state that you need them to be. One, have chosen not to actually have allied those city-states. But if you're going diplomacy and you're near the end of the game and you haven't allied a bunch of city-states, it's kind of too late for that, unless you're mass money spending. And two, any civ that goes freedom instantly wipes out gunboat diplomacy, because they have the trade routes to the city-states to boost it up. The moment that there's an ally, it boosts it up. If somebody pledged to protect, it boosts them up. If anybody on the planet has a military of equal size or better than yours, then they are defended against your gunboat diplomacy. Oh, not to mention the just leaving a spy there and constantly rigging elections. Gunboat diplomacy is not that useful, except at the mid to low level difficulties where it's easy to get gunboat diplomacy to work because the AI doesn't really build units. The concept is okay, it's just not as written and as designed useful.
For For level one in freedom, avant-garde, great people are born, is increased by 25%. Creative expression, plus one culture from each great work, but tourism is unchanged. Civil society, specialists consume only half the normal amount of food. Covert action, you guys totally named this after an old Sid Meier game. Chance of rigging election in city-states doubled. Capitalism gives you plus one local happiness from every mint, bank, and stock exchange. Economic union gives you plus three gold from all your trade routes with other civilizations that are also following freedom. And, well, we've discussed universal health care already, so.
Civil society is one that I really like. I like to build my, certain cities up quite high in the food range and then start doing specialists. So that's one of the first ones I pick if I go freedom.
I put that in the green as well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Freedom definitely has the specialists. Like, if you're trying to go super tall specialist, freedom definitely has the tenants for that. Although, in theory, you're supposed to be able to go tall or wide with every single ideology. Just freedom has the benefits for tall.
Yeah.
Whether you're going wide or tall, you can gain benefit from any one of these tenants. It's just how much of a benefit are you going to gain kind of favors, one over the other. And I think what works really well with that is avant-garde. Mm-hmm. Running your specialists, great people. Oh, yes, 25% increase, please.
Yeah, I think avant-garde's my number one pick. I always take it first, no matter what. If I only have one choice, it'll be avant-garde.
And then as for kind of middle of the road, well... How universal healthcare again?
capitalism, because you should be building those buildings anyway.
Yep.
Yeah, I choose the capitalism one as well. I usually build a tall empire, so the capitalism is very nice. I'm not too big on the economic union because I do use a lot of trade routes. I just typically don't use this one.
Yeah, and half the time I don't get more than maybe one other civ that goes freedom, and I'm like, guys, come on.
Well, that's what the force them to switch to you and then take it later. And then you get lots. But at that point, if you're forcing people to flip to you, it's probably too late.
Yeah, I put economic union in the middle, too.
I don't think there's really a bad level one freedom.
Not really.
No, I'd say covert action is kind of the low of the middle. I mean, it's always situational, but it's still in the middle.
Yeah, if you have a certain set of city-states... And you want to leave your spies hanging out and rigging the elections to constantly keep your influence going?
Yeah, if you've got another civ that's competing for you and trying to take them away all the time, too.
Yep. Like Greece in the game.
Greece every game.
Yeah.
Greece lightning! Okay, level two.
Hey, yay, yay. Anyway, volunteer army, you receive 6 free foreign legion units, no maintenance.
Overpowered.
Yeah, seriously. Urbanization, plus one local happiness from every granary, watermill, aqueduct, and hospital. I'll just editorialize real quick. Yeah, that's kind of like capitalism. You should be building all that anyway, so why you no take? Their finest hour, combat strength of cities is increased by 33%. Universal suffrage, specialists in cities produce half the normal amount of unhappiness, and your golden ages are 50% longer.
Overpowered.
Yeah, 50% golden age, thanks. Okay, new deal, all great person improvements produce plus 4 of the appropriate yield.
Woo-hoo.
So tasty.
Yes. Arsenal in Arsenal of Democracy, 25% production when building military units and plus 20 influence from military unit gifts to city-states.
Should be deleted.
What, is it the military unit part or the production part that you don't
it's
like?
It's the production part. Aww. I don't like freedom having a production ability for military because it's not meant to do military. But I don't mind if you get influence from gifting.
Is there a way to manipulate the tech trees that you can build like a junk unit that's super cheap?
Lancers.
Ah, is that the lowest you can get?
By that point in time, if you're trying to go through the tech tree, yeah, Lancers come in the Renaissance and they don't get upgraded unless you go tanky. Well, for the anti-tank gun, that is. If you don't make it all the way up to the anti-tank gun, a lot of people ignore. So, yeah.
I'm not sure it's Lancers. Really a great way to get influence, though.
Mm-hmm. 25 influence per Lancer that you build 20. In about a turn.
It's 20.
Yeah, but then it's 20 plus the normal
the 5
influence.
You normally get unless they're at war.
Right. If they're at war, you get
30 instead of 25.
It doesn't take much to build a Lancer in the later game. So,
yeah,
here you go.
Yeah, level 2 in freedom is always hard to choose stuff in between because there's all good, except for the arsenal thing. This is all good stuff.
Mess and universal suffrage for the golden ages of 50%. longer. I'd be happy if it was just specialists and cities produce half the normal amount of unhappiness.
Yeah, no.
Golden Age is just like, really? That too?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
You're flattening people. You probably don't need finest hour. So that's situational.
Yeah,
some stuff's not in range of your cities. That doesn't really help you a lot. But aside from that, it's otherwise good.
If you have the actual defensive buildings in your cities,
yeah.
Then okay. If you have the infrastructure, it's percentage. Okay, fine. But just the city itself, oh, no.
I played a lot of OCC games, so that is beneficial for me since I only have one city.
If you're
the volunteer army is even more beneficial because you can kick that army right off your lawn.
Yeah, such a freaking bad policy.
So bad it's good?
Oh, yeah.
Said they can all go tall or wide. I guess that's how you go wide.
Yeah. Hey, guys. I know you all have muskets, but don't mind me. I've got these foreign legions, which are, you know, halfway between rifles and Great War Infantry. And, oh, yeah, they have a bonus in foreign lands. Wait, was this not supposed to be a military tech tree? Military ideology?
Yeah, exactly.
I can produce units faster. I can get free units that are way better than everybody else if I do it fast. And there's other military bonuses in there. Freedom is just badly designed as far as I'm concerned. Autocracy is screwed on everything except for war. And order just has some problems as well. But freedom, superpowered.
Volunteer army, the oh crap, someone's invading me and I didn't build enough army button.
Yeah, I remember how we used to talk about the identity crisis of Piety After Gods and Kings came out?
Yeah.
A little bit here. Not as extreme as that, but still, it's present.
Yeah, no, freedom does everything and that's the problem. It's not supposed to.
If you've been dropping a lot of state tile improvements, the New Deal is really nice.
Oh.
It's good, and you need, obviously, the percent increases, so whatever you're dropping, you need the relevant buildings to give you the percent increases on them. But yeah, extra science from academies, very nice.
Extra piety from all the excess people I had because I took Messiah.
Yeah.
Let me buy all this of the new great people I ever wanted.
Let's see, 10 faith per profit you drop?
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad. And well, it's 10 faith plus 3 culture plus 3 gold. It's not a bad tile.
Mm-hmm. And then level 3 in freedom?
Media culture, 34% tourism generated by cities with a broadcast tower. Treaty organization.
Plus 4 influence with any city-state that you have a trade route with.
Oh, okay. And the most important one, space procurements. Buy spaceship parts for gold. Oh, yes.
God.
Watch me instantly win space. Thanks.
Well, you do need a fair amount of money for that. It's like cornering the world's energy market, effectively.
And assuming you also haven't disabled that victory condition.
For your Alpha Centauri fans out there.
Fans boring doesn't like space.
There are problems on this planet, Mackie. We should not be... Oh, yeah, okay, continue.
I am the problem on this planet. I don't want to build a spaceship. Come on.
Everybody stay here. In general, you only really need to buy the last couple. It just depends on your tech pace. If you've opened up all the techs for all the spaceship parts before you started building them, then maybe buying them's good. But if you've hit the various techs along the way, you probably built a few.
That's a heck of a way to win space. Why would you tech for spaceship parts and then like not build them as you go?
If you're in a close space race with somebody else.
So then you don't build spaceship parts because their space race is close?
No. You've been building them all along, but maybe you still just need to get like the cockpit done and you don't want to have to wait however many turns because they're very close
behind
you.
Don't get me wrong. Space procurement seems like it's useful if you are actually going for space.
Yeah, I would say if you're getting attacked at the end of the game, if you need more units and you have to use your production for that, or if you're using your production for, say, a late game wonder just because to help yourself, there are situations where you could stack up extra spaceship parts. If you're going OCC, then you may fly through the techs fast and therefore want to store up a bunch of cash to buy up the parts as you go.
So yeah, for those reasons, space procurements is kind of in the middle for me, but media culture?
Oh, if you're going for culture win, heck yes.
Actually, it's not that good. I mean, it's good, it's just not that good. Order definitely has the best culture combo. But yes, it is nice passive culture. That's it.
If you're going culture, you're going to build broadcast towers anyway.
Yep. It's purely passive. At 34%, that exactly knocks out the 34% negative that you get for being a different ideology from others. So What this does is actually even that playing field so that it's acting like they were equal to other freedom ones, and then you get your standard percent bonuses on top of that. So,
but I'll take an extra 34% on my massive culture wonder generating capital.
Yeah, put everything in your capital. And it's really powerful. The only problem is that your outlying cities tend not to have a lot of tourism.
No, but even if it's like your central original cities, you know, even if you went tradition, you know, and everything else is puppets or something, but having those producing an extra third.
Oh, yeah. It's not bad.
All right, order level one, Hero of the People. The rate at which Greek people are born is increased by 25%. Obviously terrible. Socialist reform, plus two to happiness from monuments. Build monuments in half the usual time. Purchasing buildings, is by 33%. Patriotic war, plus 15 attack bonus when fighting in friendly territory. Percent. Double agents, spies twice as likely to capture enemy spies attempting to steal a technology, so you can stick it to the guys who are trying to steal your technologies every 15 turns or 8 turns or whatever it becomes, depending on spy level. Young pioneers, plus one local happiness from every workshop, factory, and solar/nuclear/hydro plant, and universal healthcare, plus two local happiness every national wonder. That sounds familiar.
I know, right?
Yeah, so I don't know why they renamed Avant-Garde, but it's the same thing. Yes. It's a different method to get to the same ending.
Exactly.
Exact same bonus. Only autocracy does not get a bonus to grudge great people. And that's annoying.
Aww.
What is this? Socialist realism? You're worried about building monuments this late in the game?
No, that's not the reason. Plus two local happiness for monuments. That's why you take it, not the monuments in half the usual time.
Yeah, because it's like, I could build a monument in one turn, or I can build a monument in half a turn.
Oh, wait.
We don't do fractional turns.
Yeah,
wait.
Exactly.
So if you destroy one on city capture or something.
Yeah, all culture buildings disappear on city capture, so yeah, that's why it's half time. Okay. Because all the puppets do build monuments and stuff like that, so basically as you roll along on the order war front, yeah, it helps you quite a bit, because everybody's going to have a monument in a city.
Yes, would you like an added benefit for what you've been doing already throughout the entire game? Okay.
Yeah, and plus two's not bad. It's definitely a nice wide empire-style bonus.
Speaking of local happiness, young pioneers. Yes, please.
It's not bad.
Not as good as social realism, but okay, the solar nuclear hydro plant, But workshop and factory?
Well, that's two. And I don't
them anyway, but yeah.
I don't necessarily build factories in every city because factories are kind of limited based on how much coal you have. Primary cities, definitely, all get factories. Especially
a little bit extra happiness in your prime cities.
You can expect two, maybe three, especially for the questionable ones. Like, unless you're playing a civ that has a lot of desert, you're not building a lot of the solar farms, and you still have to go up onto that side of the tech tree. And, I mean, how many people are actually going to use their uranium for nuclear power plants? I mean, you should, if you're not trying to nuke everybody off the planet, but...
Why wouldn't you...
Phil's not familiar with this concept.
Oh, yeah, I take in level one order, I'm like, socialist realism, yes, okay, now, hero of the people, young pioneers, okay, yeah, hero of the people, but then young pioneers.
It depends on how much you get. And if you're going hardcore production, then absolutely. It'll end up, like, by the late game, give you extra happiness and go. Besides, order is the happiness tree. Make your workers happy.
Mm-hmm. I'll say what doesn't make me happy, though. Double agents.
Yeah.
Come on. If I'm really that concerned about spies trying to steal a technology, by that point in time, if I don't have a spy already in there for counter-espionage, then... Well, I would. Plus, I would have my constabulatory. Is that, and then if they were being, keep stealing it from the city, fine. I guess I'll put a police station in there, too. But usually, spy for counterintelligence and then maybe a constabulatory is quite sufficient.
It's a good counter to the autocratic multi-steal. So if you have autocrats floating around, it's a good chance they're trying to steal them. And if you can kill off... Remember, you can catch a spy, but you don't necessarily kill them. Boosting up your chance of killing them means that they can't use that spy at all for a period of time, which will slow them down. and get you better. It's a defensive mechanism. I don't tend to put spies in for counter-espionage, but when I do, getting a bonus towards it is nice.
I just rather have the counter-espionage spies in my capital, which is usually where I would tend to put them. And then if it's really being a problem, then I'll just build a constabulary and choose something else for level.
Yeah, but that doesn't slow down the autocratic spy stealing. That's the problem with the half. Constabularies and police stations are kind of a mini speed bump to that, to an autocrat.
Well, that may well be, but okay, they're going to gain something, but I'm really not going to be like, oh crap, I am in so much worse position now that they stole that technology. That maybe that little bit sooner than they might have otherwise, when there's something else that I could go for and put on a bigger hurt than kind of this passive defensive.
Depends on if you're the tech lead or not.
Academy of Sciences, plus one local happiness from every university, observatory, public school and research lab, party leadership. You get plus one food, production science, gold, culture, and a couple tokens for the local arcade in every city. Mm-hmm. Resettlement, new city, start with an extra
3
population, because that's going to really matter at this point in the game. How often are you settling a bunch of cities late game where you need to then develop them?
I agree with Phil.
If you're doing a burn and purge.
Yeah,
and
AI
also,
and it's dumb city
quests.
Oh, but how much burn and purge is really going to get you that much benefit? Unless it's really, really settled at that late in the game? No.
Well,
okay, if you're the Shoshone, fine.
Yeah, there's that. Depends on how fast you get it. Like, if you're the first person to order, you get 2 level ones for free. And then your next social policy for the moment that you get it is resettlement. So you're just entering the industrial era. You've finished your 3 factories instantly because you saved a bunch of money. Yeah, I could still see settling, especially if you're settling for the aluminum and coal and oil. I mean, it's not great. It's not like super awesome.
It's absolutely destroyed by something like 5-year plan, though.
I was about to say, yeah, I'd rather get that nice boost to my existing cities. Thank you.
Yeah,
in fact, that boost applies to new cities too, but it also helps you build up if you don't have like an entire army just sitting around waiting to flatten everybody so you can do a burn and purge.
Yeah,
don't get me wrong, I love burn and purge. It's great. But
I mean, yeah, it's what Phil does every Sunday afternoon, but that's beside the point.
Well, he should stop eating tacos.
Sunday.
But it's a depending thing. The other depending thing is the map. Like, if you're playing on a Terra map, then you're still trying to settle across the oceans. And, I mean, it's definitely one of those tenets that is there to directly answer people saying that late game settling is bad because you get crap. Well, now you get less crap.
It's not like you get a whole bunch of buildings or something.
Yeah. You get monuments in half the time.
Plus 34% tourism to other order civilizations. That's Cultural Revolution. Workers, faculties, factories increase a city's science output by 25%. Build factories in half the usual time. And 5-year plan, plus 2 production per city and plus 1 production for every mine and quarry.
Factories being built in half the time and obviously also giving you a science boost is definitely the number one in that list for level 2 order.
Yeah. It's kind of good.
Yep. And then I'd put 5-year plan after that, and then party leadership after that.
Yeah, that's actually... Well, it's not quite a tie. I'd still take the extra science from factories first, but...
Yes.
That's not far behind, though.
Yeah, super production for mines and quarries. Whee!
I've been touting a lot of the happiness tenants, but plus one local happiness from every university, observatory, public school, and research lab. That's middle of the road. That's nice, but that's not, like, gotta have.
It's better than some, because you will always, always, always build science buildings. You may not build commerce buildings.
No, if it was plus happiness from every library,
no.
That included that on there too. Okay,
oh God,
maybe.
No, that's way too easy. It's called balance in this case. There's a certain limit.
I understand that, but it's plus one local happiness at university. I mean, I said it's nice, but it's
you're
going to
have universities in every single city. There's not a single city that you should not have a university in. There's not a single city that you should not have a public school in. And there's not a single city that you should not have a research lab in. You cannot say the same thing about commerce buildings. You cannot say the same thing about culture buildings. You cannot say the same thing about production buildings. And you cannot say the same thing about military buildings.
I don't know. Once you have workers' faculties, you might start spamming up those factories too.
It's like when we were talking about urbanization back in Freedom, because there's the granary, the water mill, the aqueduct, and the hospital. Those are also buildings you should probably be having.
Yeah, in every single city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nah, it depends on, of course, the city's capacity.
Well, you're just playing.
It matters less if you're trying to end now.
Public school and research lab in every city? No, not necessarily.
Yes, if you want to see the end of the game.
No, I see the end of the game without having public school.
If I see the end of the game in a normal time.
Dan, I think Imagine's trying to tell you you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. That's his opinion. That's what I'm saying. That's not an absolute. No, I disagree.
Yep, you're doing it wrong.
In your opinion.
Fact.
He would have bombers, and he would use those bombers to bomb your cities that are lacking in the research lab aspect.
I'll place a deity and you don't.
I'll use my guided missiles against your rifles, thanks.
Okay, fine. I play on Emperor. Fine. But I don't see the need.
No, it has nothing to do with difficulty.
In every city? No, not in every city.
It's a straight numbers thing, Dan. You build them.
More science equals more techs equals more stuff. Tech is the core of the game. You can ignore all sorts of other stuff around it, but if you ignore tech, then...
I'm not ignoring tech by not having public schools and research labs in every city. I get libraries and universities, maybe observatories too, where I can.
The only way you can afford to ignore tech is if you can end the game with your current tech.
Right,
just
then.
End it. You're on a timer at that point, because if people get too far in front, you're screwed. But if you can end the game outright, as in kill everybody... okay, then you can start to ignore tech, if you can pull that off.
It's kind of hilariously funny that this is a teacher telling us we don't need public schools.
This is a game, not real life.
It's a good option.
That's exactly it, because it's a game, you want no part of this.
And you know what? In the game, you need to have a university before you can have a public school.
Yeah.
Uh-huh, what? Yeah, so I just throw that kind of argument out the window.
You still lost here.
Whatever, it's still hilariously funny.
I haven't lost anything.
Let's see, which were more common first in history? Never mind. Level 3 for order. Dictatorship of the proletariat. Plus 34% tourism to civilizations that have less happiness. Trollololol. Iron. Free courthouse upon city capture. And slight pioneers may finish spaceship parts with great engineers, plus 10 science and capital.
If you take Iron Curtain, you misclicked.
Yeah.
And then... it could happen. People misclick sometimes.
Save often.
This is like the stupidest
level. That's like a level 1 ever. Thing.
Yeah, it should be an autocracy, actually. Take the free courthouse, drop the build courthouses in half the time, and... that's where it should be. Iron Curtain is pretty stupid. Oh, yeah, and it only works if you pick Annex or Raise. It doesn't work if you choose Puppets. You have to choose, and this is the stupid part, you have to choose to annex the city the moment you take it, and it is the most idiotic choice ever.
Can you start raising it and then stop raising it, and then annex it?
Yeah, you can raise it down and then annex. It'll automatically annex. But the thing is, you never annex a city when you take it, because that is where you're going to get the massive unhappiness hit, and you can't build or buy or do anything with the city until it's out of its rebellion phase.
Which is why the auto-annex bug was so annoying.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's basically a noob trap. I mean, realistically, they should just delete the code for being able to choose to annex a city when you take a city, because only people who don't know how bad that is will choose to pick it. No one will purposely choose to do that.
It makes a terrible option slightly less terrible, but still worse than every alternative you have. Go for it.
Yeah. But order does have awesome culture. The culture bonus for level 3, especially when tied with the culture bonus for level 2. So I'm happier than you. So you're going to eventually flip to order. Oh, wait. We're both ordered now. Thanks.
Holy.
So I did a lot of hard work to get you to flip to order. From my super happy empire, and now that you're order, you're going to be my puppet soon, aren't you?
They will be wearing your blue jeans and listening to your rock and roll.
Dictatorship of the proletariat. I mean, spaceship pioneers, it's nice to be able to finish spaces part with great engineers. It's not as nice as being able to finish spaceship parts with gold, but when you've got the dictatorship, even I, who am not, you know, one for the culture game, even I can't deny the strength of that.
Yeah. Using a great engineer for a spaceship part? Really?
Yeah.
Well, if you just need that kind of like one or two at the end, very situational, but
then build
it's still better than Iron Curtain.
Build a wonder. Yeah, if I'm going to use a late game engineer, which will probably cost me a huge amount to build normally or cost me faith, I'd rather get a wonder out of it.
Yeah, when you start getting up to the 6,000 faith per specialist.
Yeah.
What if you're just sitting on faith and you only need like one spaceship part or something? Just finish it,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, that's fine then. But
it's a little bit iffy in level 3.
Yeah, especially because you, in order, get a lot of production bonuses. So you should be able to build the spaceship parts extremely quickly anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it really shouldn't matter unless, of course, you're getting nuked or something by the Freedom Civ, who's also going space. Yeah, and if you build a manufactory with the engineer, then you can finish multiple parts faster. I mean, there's the how much you're going to get on the instant versus how long it'll take for the manufacturer to pay off. But
once you're that late in the game, I think the manufacturer is going to lose. But
oh, yeah. It'll lose pretty quick.
And you get a whopping 10 science in your capital, too.
Woo! 10 whole science!
Yeah, when you're producing...
thousands.
Many hundreds. Well, no, it should be thousands, yeah, by that point.
Yep.
10. Woo. And we're not going to have time on really this episode to get into, and of course it's always in part situational, but which do you think is better than another? You know, if someone's just like, I don't want to have time to think about which one to take, just tell me the one that you think, generally speaking, is going to get me farther ahead than anything else. Which one would that be? And let's start with our guest.
Freedom.
Let's go. He laughs right afterwards. Okay, who has the next least seniority? Ha ha ha. Oh, that would be Madjin.
Autocracy is awesome.
Phil.
Autocracy.
Mackie.
I gotta go Freedom. It's a little more flexible.
And it's it's ever so slightly on the edge, but yeah, I'm gonna get it to order. And we're gonna quickly move on.
Dan gave it to order. Let's all be shocked.
It's a good thing shocked. That Freedom is flexible when the autocracy ship bends you over.
I was trying not to say that.
That's okay.
That's
all right.
Phil went there for you.
Freedom is good in all situations and is always overpowered, but I just like the tech stealing from autocracy.
We actually received feedback on the last episode, episode 181.
No, we did.
Yes, but... John C. Nunn said, it seems that some of the commentators didn't like trade routes with city-states in general, citing both larger gold and some science from major AIs. The larger gold with major AIs is largely true. However, that science leakage is why late in the game, none of my routes go to major AIs and go to the city-states instead. By then, I'm always well ahead in science, and I don't want the AI getting science bonuses when I wouldn't get any. Now, that exact policy that discussion was on was a bit on the weak side. If I went for the policy at all, it would typically only yield me a total of 5 or 6 gold per turn after all trade routes get renewed. I responded to this thought as well as his other ones. And to this one, I said, by the stages of the game when you're able to generate considerable double-digit gold incomes from a single trade route with another civilization, the amount of science you, and typically most if not all AIs, are generating is considerable enough that any leakage of beakers to me is minimally proportional. I don't feel like that's really hurting me and benefiting them that much.
Yeah, if I have
volume.
To choose between like a 20 gold per turn from a city state or getting double that and having a little science leakage, I think I know which one I'm going to pick.
Yeah, pretty much. Not to mention you get tourism from the trade route. So
there's that too.
You might lose 1 or 2 science to another civ, but you get boosted tourism output. You get double the amount of gold.
Yeah, it may be a bigger number than 1 or 2 because it's later in the game. But
well, if they're keeping up with you, if they're like super far behind, then who cares if they're getting 5?
Yeah, <science.
laughs> exactly.
If they're that far behind, it's okay.
If you're this far behind, this is a pity trade route, man.
Yeah, pretty much.
Then his second thought. The commerce policy increasing great general spawn rate, and we talked about the new and revised social policies in the last episode. The problem with this commerce policy is that unlike great artists, writers, musicians, and prophets, great engineers, scientists, and merchants' next spawn value are shared with gods and kings. And so adopting this policy would make it difficult to spawn anything other than a merchant. Even if playing Venice, your puppets would provide plenty of merchants without this policy. To which I responded, with the wagon train policy as a prerequisite for this commerce policy, no less, to get the increasing great general spawn rate, to me, the then further adopting the policy, which is entrepreneurship, is part of the path for completing the commerce tree, given the double gold output from trade missions to city-states, excluding if there are no city-states left, or you can't get to them, of course.
If I'm using Merchants of Venice, I am definitely using commerce, and I'm definitely getting the bonus merchant spawn. So, yes, you're right. If you use this policy, you will get more Merchants of Venice.
That's kind of the point.
Exactly. Yes, that means you're going to get less engineers and less scientists, but that's part of the plan. You're not doing it on purpose. Or wait, yes, you are. If you want scientists and engineers, build scientists and engineers and don't take a policy that gives you more merchants. And it does not make it difficult to spawn anything other than a merchant, because you would have to purposely work those merchants. And my spawn rate for scientists and engineers in my cities versus puppets tends to mean that I get more scientists and engineers than puppets produce merchants, unless they're like super powered puppets that produce lots of merchants.
And then finally, he says, also with regards to wagon train, caravans are a waste of a trade slot, given that cargo ships provide two times the stuff, even if the destination city is on the same landmass as the origin city. If you want more income, you're much better off with the left side of exploration. And I said, I agree, exceptions being, of course, not being able to defend your sea-based routes, or okay, yet, you know, kind of earlier in the game, or finding oneself landlocked by circumstance or even map type.
Yes, play on a Pangaea and go only sea-based resource. Yeah. No, even on a Pangaea, you would still want to use cargo ships if you can get to the coast and all that. But there are times when you're going to have not coastal cities everywhere.
Even so when you have a really good range, you still might not be able to reach enough to equal the amount of trade routes you could have.
Yeah, or just might not be settled on the coast. Mm-hmm. Like, you could be playing on a map that has no coast, or
everybody's went in from the coast.
Yeah, everybody's far away from the coast.
Yeah, I always use cargo ships unless it gets to that point where I just don't have any other coastal cities I can use, or if there's a specific civ that I'm wanting to connect to.
Yeah, not all civs are going to be able to get a coastal city for you.
And then the last comment from episode 181 actually came from YouTube. A comment on YouTube? ECAT2468 says, Merchant Confederacy is very useful if you've been embargoed by the World Congress. So I responded, I said, so long as trading with city-states is also available, i.e., you know, city-states are, you know, are actually...
The world doesn't hate you so much.
It is useful, but I said I wouldn't go so far to say very useful. Plus one gold may net you up to, say, plus 8 gold per turn in the latest stages of the game, if there are that many left to trade with and you can reach. Now, certainly every little bit would help in that circumstance, though you might be better off than with internal trade routes to increase the size of your city so you can work more tiles and run more specialists, including for more gold.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-212-88-7659. That's 441-212-88-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
All right, so I think that takes us unceremoniously or ceremoniously, depending upon your definition of a ceremony, to the end of the show.
My mere presence is a ceremony. Thank you, listeners, for joining us on Polycast episode 182. I am the main team, and today I was joined by regular co-hosts Dan Q.
Now that's something everybody can play.
Makalua.
Dan needs to work on his slogans a little more.
And Majin.
Yeah, please stop playing with Dan.
As well as...
That's wrong.
Was there more people?
I co-host, I didn't forget Methos, but everyone ignored me. Oh, so, you know.
Well, thanks for having me.
That'll be fun to edit.
I could get rambling about the tick, bad, blah, you know.
Blah, 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 yeah.
That's all, folks.
Blah, 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 that's all, folks.
Futurism, plus 100 tourism with all known civs when a great whiter, a great writer.
Very quiet. He's hunting whiters.
Very right up there with the wee wiring. Let's try that again.
Drone, on and on and on and on and on.
Okay, Matt, you survived.
Never going to survive unless you get a little bit crazy.
Oh, only a little bit crazy? Or you...
Actually, well, there's more that you can do with them, but I think Dan's telling us that we have to move on. A different topic.
He's like, shut up already. This wasn't supposed to be all about the tender.
Record date, September 7th, 2013. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.